Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Hey, welcome to Rockin' Finn Radio with me, Tom P. Weekend of April 10th and 11th. Happy New Year! Okay, to me, this is the true Happy New Year. Opening of the 2021 trout season where you can catch them and you can keep them. Put them in a stringer, put them in a bucket. You want to fry them, you want to bake them, you want to grill them, you want to smoke them. Now you can do it. And man, the day load fish all over the place. I got calls, especially from K-Bay. Tommy P., you can walk on these trout at Tuckahoe Lake. Pond or Lodge Pond, my God, you can't see the water for the trout. And so it goes. A lot of stuff happening, though. This striped bass fishing, pun intended, has been off the freaking hook, man. Variety of sizes, anywhere 12 inches, 13 inches, up to keeper size. Okay, it is happening. The drum bite's going to start real soon. I had a very reliable report. Hey, man, Great Bay, Graveling Point, Ohio Avenue, Iowa. Whoa, we got some boomers coming in. Kind of puppy size, nothing really that big yet, but a lot of fun to catch. I'll tell you, to get for the meat you're going to get, you need at least 20 pounds. You need something at least 20 pounds, at least get a meal or two out of it. But a lot of stuff happening. Coming up in our next segment, next two segments, we have Brandon Harrison, New Jersey Bureau of Marine Fisheries. Hey, man, that striper tagging, netting and tagging program going on in Lower Delaware Bay around Reed's Beach. What is the Bureau of Marine Fisheries doing? They're catching all these stripers. They're taking scale samples. They're aging them. They're tagging them. And we have some very, very interesting data being collected. We'll get into that also. Do we have trophy freshwater fish in New Jersey? Hell yeah, man. We got some monster muskies. Kevin Johns from New Jersey Chapter Muskies, Inc. Chapter 22, as a matter of fact. We're going to be talking some trophy muskie fishing here in New Jersey. We're going to wrap it up with some reports. Grab that cup. Grab that Red Bull. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
Download Rack and Fin Radio as a podcast on the WPG Talk Radio app. Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5. WPG Talk Radio 95.5 FM and 1450 AM, South Jersey's talk station.
Hey, we're talking stripers are going crazy. We realize that. Great fishing going on. A lot of fish below that. Okay, below the 24 and a lot in that 26 to 27, not quite 28 range. So some great, you know, catch and release fishing going on. The Bureau of Marine Fisheries has a fascinating program going on. It's been going on for I don't know how many years now, easily over a decade. It's they're tagging, they're gill netting and then tagging stripers there in the Lower Delaware Bay, Reed's Beach area, somewhere in there. Finding a lot of great stuff, and it fluctuates from year to year. Joining us on the line right now is Brandon Harrison. He's an assistant biologist with the New Jersey Bureau of Marine Fisheries. He's been on this now, working on it. Now he's pretty much running this thing here down there on the Lower Bay. He's going to give us some motion on what is happening with the striped bass and the tagging program. Brandon, how's it going, brother?
Good, Tom. Thanks for having me on. How you doing?
Great to have you on Rack and Fin, first time. See, now you're doomed. Now you're going to be on here at least two or three times a year. I'm going to be hounding you, Harrison. But, Brandon, what's the name of this program, this project to get things going here? It's been going on for a number of years. What's the deal here? What's it called?
Yeah, so it's the Cooperative Coastal Striped Bass Tagging Program. It's funded by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and it's been going on since 1985. New Jersey, New Jersey joined the program in about 1989, so it's been going on for quite a while.
Now, these fish, you're setting gill nets. Now, listen, gill nets used to be the doom and gloom. Fish caught in a gill net, they're going to die. Okay, Brandon, yeah. That's all changed with technology and the knitting materials, correct? Go into that because I told people you were coming on. Ask them about that. How many bass are they killing? Blah, 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 blah. So go into that, please.
Yeah, I think the big thing is we don't let them sit very long in the water. So
exactly.
We're setting them and then tending them pretty quickly. So all the striped bass that we're catching are still doing really good and alive, got a lot of energy, and we get them out of the net as quick as we can, take a measurement of them and a weight of them, mm-hmm. and take a scale sample for aging purposes, put a tag in them, and then get them back in the water as quick as we can. So they're always pretty lively when we get them back in. So,
listeners, like I said, there's some that are listening. I know you guys. It's fine. Minimal stress. These people are professionals here. They don't want to damage the bass either. But yeah, now, exactly. Brian, going into it now, you're getting a cross-section of bass. Are you finding that, one, first, finding that they're similar size fish schooling together? Are there different size fish in every haul? And first off, with the flow of the Delaware or whatever, how deep are you setting the nets?
Yeah, so typically we're out there in March and April, so a lot of the fish we're tagging are kind of in that 24, that like bonus size fish,
right.
Like 24 to a little less than 28 inches. Earlier in March, we were catching even smaller ones, like some 18, 19, 20 inches. And then actually just this week, we saw the first two big fish come through. We had a 46-pound fish and a
43-pound
fish. So,
hey, yeah. How did he get his head in that little – what's the mesh size? How did he fit in there, man?
Yeah, so we use pretty it's only like 5-inch, 5.5-inch mesh, but those bigger fish tend to just get kind of wrapped up in it. They don't really get gilled or anything. They just, you know, part of the mesh might get wrapped around a spine or something
okay.
like that. So we kind of have to scoop them out with a net because they fall out pretty easily right away, so being so big.
Join us on the Rack and Fin line this morning is Brandon Harrison, assistant biologist, New Jersey Bureau of Marine Fisheries there in Naco Creek. Topic is the Cooperative Coastal Striped Bass Tagging Program going on as we speak there in Lower Delaware Bay. Well, Brandon, now these fish coming up to spawn in the river proper, are they coming down? What's the mixed population all about?
Yeah, they usually school up in the bay there before they head up the Delaware River to spawn. So that's probably what they're still doing. They'll be going up there in another couple weeks. We have caught a couple like post spawn fish a few years ago, towards like first week in May. Maryland was doing a study on a reproductive study, and so we were taking out some of the ovaries, and we noticed a couple of the fish had already spawned. So that was pretty interesting to find.
Well, Brandon, how long is this program going to go on? Till the end of April, early May? What's the deal?
Yeah, that's typically when we wrap up. So it's just March and April that we're usually out there tagging.
Now, have you been able to put the nets out daily? I mean, the river's been – I'm coming up from the Gap. We're in Pennsylvania. We're coming down the Gap, and it is smoking the other day. I said, are they going to be able to get nets out in that kind of, you know, conditions? I mean, you have a lot of high water situations?
Yeah, we noticed some high water, definitely around the high tides. But for us, the biggest limiting factor tends to be the winds, you know, especially in March. You get a lot of storms coming through still. So some of those windy days, it's difficult to set and tend gill nets. So that tends to be the limiting factor for us. But we've gotten out probably 8 or 9 times so far this year, trying to get out of 2 to 3 times a week, obviously just depending on the weather.
Sure. Well, Brent, how deep are these nets set again?
So, we typically set the last couple of years we've been using like 6-foot nets up to like 8-foot nets.
Right.
So we've noticed the last few years we've been finding fish kind of in the shallower water.
Okay.
Historically, they used to use sometimes deeper nets up to like 11 feet. So it just depends upon the year and where we're finding the fish and whatnot. But definitely the last couple of years, we've been using some of the shallower nets and staying kind of like hugging up on the beaches.
Yeah, for lack of a better term, do you have these travel routes like sort of mapped out where you catch bass year after year? You move around? How do you find them?
They used to, like historically, especially in the late 90s, early 2000s, they were tagging like thousands of fish a year.
Wow.
They didn't really have to search around too much. They'd just go out off of Reed's Beach there. And the last few years have been a lot more challenging, so we'll have to hunt around a little more. We definitely have some hot spots, I guess. Especially this year, I feel like we'll have a couple good days where we'll be on the fish, and then the next day we'll go out to the same spot and they'll be gone, and we'll have to kind of hunt around for them. So it seems to be a little bit spread out this year and not
kind of
around the same spot.
Listen, that's why they call it fishing and not netting. I don't know.
Exactly. You did it.
Well, Brian, what's an average catch?
Kind of like I said, this year's been been hit or miss. We'll have a couple nets where we'll catch 15, 20 in a net, and then the next day we might not catch any. So it's been real hit or miss like that.
Now, with the hit and miss, as you said, will that make you guys consider keeping the nets out longer, extending the program, like another couple of weeks or something? Or is it a set time, water temperature, hits certain things, and that's it, they're done? Let's get it over with.
Generally, the way the programs are set up, it's generally like we're kind of assigned to be out there tagging in March and April. Like I said, we might hang out a little bit into May just to see what's going on and maybe collect other types of data and get some biological information from some of the fish we're catching. But typically, we're limited to just tagging in March and April.
Well, Brent, have you ever caught any previously tagged fish in the nets?
Yeah, so...
Nice!
I think it was 2018, we had set a net, caught a fish, and noticed it had the red streamer tag on it, and we went back to the tagging database and looked into it, and we had actually tagged the same fish a year prior, almost to the, it was like to the week, and it was in like the same exact location, so that was a pretty cool event that took
place. Had it grown much?
Yeah, I don't remember exactly how much, but it was a smaller fish, so it grew, you know, a little bit. But yeah, it was just really interesting to see the same exact fish show up almost a year later, same location.
Now, Brent, on the fishing end, I'm getting reports all over the place from even some stripers, even Naco Creek, Bass River, the Mullica River, Egg Harbor River, that anywhere from 8, 10, 12 inches up to some keeper size, especially the Mullica, some keeper size bass. So it seems to be a cross section of everything happening. Are these, in your opinion, are like the Mullica River fish or the Great Egg Harbor fish, are they their own distinct populations or are these all migrants?
That's a pretty good question. I think a lot of us still have those same questions that we're trying to figure out. You know, there's the way striped bass are thought to, you generally have three major spawning areas. You have the Chesapeake, the Delaware, and the Hudson. But yeah, there's definitely some evidence that there's some localized spawning that goes on in some of the smaller rivers as well. So I definitely can't count that out of the question. But generally, just like overall, the large proportion of fish are spawning in those main three areas. But we'll definitely have some localized spawning in some of the smaller rivers too.
Okay, joining us on the line this morning is Brandon Harrison, assistant biologist, New Jersey Bureau of Marine Fisheries. Brandon, I have to hang in for another segment because I want to ask some questions. Listen, I worked with fisheries way back when, and we did some tagging, most notably shad and stuff like that. But absolutely fascinating when you hear, like, the fish you tagged the year prior, 2 years prior, 3 years prior, where they are recovered, where they're caught from, you know, either hook and line or in more research nets. Brent, you hang in for another segment?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, people, grab that cup, grab that red. We'll be right back. Rack and Fin Radio. I know it's trout. I know I like my bass. It's just like stripers just got this hold on me, especially from the research end. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
If you're wondering what to do with your money in these unusual economic times, or if you have questions about retirement planning, IRAs, 401ks, or taxes, then listen to The Heart of Your Money, Saturday morning at 8 on WPG, featuring author and financial expert Joe Yakovich. The Heart of Your Money will focus on you, your family, and your financial portfolio. The Heart of Your Money with Joe Yakovich, Saturday morning at 8 on WPG, Talk Radio 95.5.
There's far too much fun to fit into one day, so the Atlanta County Utilities Authority is celebrating Earth Month with things to do, learn, and enjoy every day in April, and it's all free. Enjoy family-friendly performances, animal shows, workshops, crafts, kids' story time, and even yoga. ACUA's Earth Month offers something for everyone. Learn about beekeeping, native plants, composting, renewable energy, and much more. Get the schedule and sign up for updates at acua.com/Earth Month.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Here we go. Look out below. Back inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. A happy New Year weekend. I said in the opening monologue, anytime it's an opening of a season, Rack and Fin Radio, Parallel Universe, indeed calls for a New Year celebration. This is what I call the real trout opener today. Real as in real, R-E-E-L, and put them on a stringer or put them on a bucket, go home, grind them, put them on the grill, fry them up, whatever. Yeah, not the catch and release. Down here in South Jersey, no, that's not how it is. But a little non sequitur. Join us online again is Brandon Harrison, assistant biologist in the Jersey Bureau of Marine Fisheries. Topic is the Delaware River Cooperative Coastal Striper Tagging Program going on. You got to love it. I'm fascinated with the tagging aspect of things from the end game. Like, where that tag was recovered, where that fish went, how far it grew, how much. It didn't grow that much. The information is just fascinating. Brandon, thanks for hanging in for another segment. Like I said off the air, this, the results when you get a call or get something in the mail, whatever, email, what have you, a fish that you tagged X number of years ago or last year was caught here. I mean, that has to be pretty fulfilling. And does it answer any questions like, oh, my God, I never knew the fish would go that far, or what?
Yeah, no, it's always interesting to get some tag returns back and see how far the fish are going. Even one interesting one I was looking up before is we had one fish that we tagged. It got caught and released twice about 2 months later in Cape Cod Bay. So it got caught and released once. Then it got 3 days later, got caught and released again. And then finally, it got harvested about 5 years later down in North Carolina. So it's always interesting to see the life and the travel of some of these fish.
How far? I mean, is it unreasonable? I mean, how far do these things go? I mean, I heard once from someone that was a striper that was tagged here caught in Casco Bay, Maine, or the Sheepscot River in Maine or something like that, or all the way down, like you said, North Carolina. These things just keep going. As the Gray's fish tag research is finding out, they travel to parts that we never thought they traveled to before. So this is a wide open book, man.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the furthest north one of our tagged fish ever went was the St. George River up in Thomaston, Maine. So that was tagged in 1996.
Holy God!
Yeah. And then a year later in July, it was caught up there. And I think the furthest south fish we ever had one go was Cedar Island, North Carolina. So, now, pretty good range.
Brandon, the data that you glean from this goes to what? How is that incorporated into future management ideas or future management possibilities? Where does that data go?
Yeah, so a lot. It gets used in a whole suite of different ways. We create, like, age-length keys because, like I said, each fish that we catch, not only are we tagging it, but we're taking scale samples from it, so we're getting the age of the fish and some biological data. So that all gets used for stock assessments. And then, there's interest in always developing kind of more sophisticated models that incorporate a lot of this movement and migration. So that's definitely something in the future that's a lot of this tagging data will be beneficial just in stock assessments in the future.
So, Brandon, a cross-section of the stripers that are caught in that, you said 16, 17 inches, maybe smaller, up to how big was that bass that you mentioned in the other segment? 48 pounds? What?
Yeah, we had a 46-pound fish the other day. I think the largest fish that we've ever tagged was 53 pounds. We catch the whole suite of them.
Now, Brandon, you took the scale samples. I guess, how old was that fish?
I don't have the exact age on me, but yeah, we do all the aging, and we age fish up to 22 years old. So,
whoa!
Some of the smaller fish are typically only like 3 years old, but we just go all the way up into the 20s, so.
So, Brandon, now in the Delaware River itself, I'm big on the shad fishing up there, and we always have a thing now we call it when the little shadlings come down in September, the stripers and the smallies just beat them up. I mean, that's why maybe the shad numbers are down. But a striper, lazy eggs up there, spawn up there in the river, how long before that fish will actually come down and make its way either south or north?
So in the summertime, actually, another one of the surveys we work on is a seine survey in the Delaware River, and we're targeting those young of the year striped bass. We catch them all the way down as far south as can't think of the exact town right now, but they start making their way down, with the currents and whatnot, pretty much right away. So they'll hang out in the rivers and then make their way down into the bay and the estuary and kind of hang out there for a couple of years before joining the coastal migration.
So when they join a coastal migration, they'll be what length, approximately 8 inches, 10, 12? What do you think? Generally?
Generally, probably a little bit more than that, in that like 3-year-old range, so maybe okay. like 18 inches or something. So and then they start making their way out. So, generally that size.
Okay, Brandon, I want to touch on numbers, just like how long has this program been going on, and you have a number in totality, how many stripers have been caught, have been tagged. But what about, their nets? What about oddball stuff? I mean, the Atlantic sturgeon, there's a big program with that to get those things back on track. Have you caught sturgeon? Have you caught anything really out of the ordinary besides the stripers?
Yeah, we occasionally will catch Atlantic sturgeon. We actually caught one the other day. It was the first time in a few years that we caught one. And we tag those fish as well and take data from them. And we'll take a genetic sample for analysis that we send out. So also American shad, we catch some of them from time to time. Tag those fish as well. So. But otherwise, every once in a while we'll catch a bluefish or a black drum. But primarily it's all striped bass. So
the thing with the sturgeon, they've been around since the Pleistocene, if not before. I mean, you talk about really primitive, and they're making a hell of a comeback. Kudos to Heather Corb there, was on this study. They're coming back, which is pretty good to see. Water quality, conservation, what have you. No kill regulations. They're making it down. But let's get to the striper numbers. We're up against a hard break here. You only have a few minutes left. The numbers seem to me to be staggering. For all the effort you put into it, it's pretty rewarding, is it not?
Yeah, no, definitely. It's always good to tag a bunch of fish while we're out there. Yeah, since 1989, the state, we've tagged nearly 35,000 fish, so 34,982 fish to be exact.
Yep. What? Did you give me that number? What?
Yeah, almost 35,000 fish have been tagged by New Jersey. So,
Brandon, percentage of returns, though. It sounds like a lot, but what is it, 1%, 2%, half of 1%?
Actually, for New Jersey, we get about 25% recapture rate. So we've had about 8,700 fish that have been recaptured and reported to us.
Now, Brandon, what color are the tags that you're putting in the stripers here?
They're like a reddish color, and we tag them on the left side, kind of down towards the belly.
Right.
They're little streamer tags that come out a few inches from the belly of the fish.
Okay, a few years ago, shout out to Captain Al Crudelli on a Bayhound. I want to have him on with a week fix that's been coming up. I was fishing with Captain Al and caught a striper, not big, maybe 20 inches, 19, 20 inches, and it had a green tag in it. Which all the writing was pretty much gone. I could barely make something out. I was wondering, green tags, could that have come from where? I kept it for whatever reason.
There are other tagging programs out there. I'm not off the top of my head. I don't know which organization uses green tags, but it's something I could definitely find out for you.
This thing was pretty worn out, man. This bass looked kind of tired. It was in early November in the back behind Sea Isle. It was crazy. One of those threw out a paddle tail and a thing hit it. I said, "Whoa!" I said, "What's the tag?" Al says, "We took a photo of it and let it go and I sent that in." But that was basically it. But so it's oranges, red tags, and how many so far this year?
We've had about 130 this year so far. So.
Is that about on pace or?
So it's historically, it's like I said, they used to tag thousands of them back in the.
Right.
Late 90s, early 2000s. But for the last few years, the last handful of years, it's a pretty decent year so far. So we still have another 3 weeks to go and hoping to definitely catch and tag some more out there. So, we'll see how it goes.
Listen, it's just a fascinating program. It is the Cooperative Coastal Striped Bass Tagging Program, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and Jersey Bureau of Marine Fisheries, Fish and Wildlife, whatever, have been involved since, as Brandon said, 89. Brandon, if people want to find out more about this, is there something on a division website or anything?
Yeah, there's a few pages on the website, just njfishandwildlife.com. There's some information up there. And yeah, you can always contact us and get it. We can get you some more information if it's not up on our website.
Okay, Brandon, one last thing. From the time the program's wrapped up, you put the nets away, the boats away, whatever, to the time the data is totally formulated and submitted, whatever, what time gap in there?
It usually takes, because it's a whole process, we have to enter all our data, have it proofed, and make sure it's all been entered accurately, and then we submit it to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for them to enter it into their database, and then they send it back to us. So by the time, we get recaptured data back, it's usually maybe a year delay or something like that. So,
Wow. Yeah. But still, it's an ongoing thing. It's still fascinating. Okay, Brandon Harrison, assistant biologist in the Jersey Bureau of Marine Fisheries there at Naco Creek. Thanks for joining us. Listen, it's a fascinating program. Go to njfishandwildlife.com. Hit sold. Brandon said there's some more information about this netting and tagging program. And, dude, be safe out there. That lower Delaware get real ugly real fast. Trust me.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've seen that, man.
Definitely.
Hey, once I washed up on that jetty, it reads beach.
Yeah,
they thought a manatee got lost. It was me. Okay, Brandon, you take care. Best of all. See you soon.
All right, have a good one. Thanks.
This is a great program. NJFishandWildlife.com. Check out. Go to saltwater fishing. Go to Striper. The tagging, the netting and tagging program. Very, very interesting. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio. Whoa. Yeah, we have some big-ass trophy fish in freshwater as well. Pure strain muskies. Coming up. Be right back.
WPG Talk Radio 95.5 FM and 1450 AM. South Jersey's number one talk station.
Fox News. I'm Carmen Roberts. The Supreme Court lifts a COVID ban on some religious activities.
The court ruling 5-4, siding with challengers to California's COVID restrictions, banning in-home religious gatherings, in some cases things like prayer meetings and Bible studies.
Fox's Shannon Bream. President Biden's proposed annual budget of $1.5 trillion draws criticism from Republicans and Democrats for its small increase in defense spending.
President calls for $769 billion in non-defense spending, a 16% increase from last year, and $753 billion for defense programs, an increase of less than 2%.
Fox's Jared Halperin. Many liberals want to cut military spending while many conservatives want to increase it to deal with growing foreign threats. America's listening to Fox News.
Your WPG Talk Radio 95.5 AccuWeather forecast for South Jersey. Overnight, it'll be damp with plenty of clouds and a touch of drizzle, low around 50. Saturday, clouds will limit sun, high 65. Saturday night, there will be a shower early, then some steadier rain late, low 56. Sunday, rain during the morning, then becoming partly sunny and warmer in the afternoon, but there can be a shower or thunderstorm, high 75. I'm AccuWeather's Kara Babinski on WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Download Rack and Fin Radio as a podcast on the WPG Talk Radio app. Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Yo, welcome back to Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Weekend of April 10th and 11th. Brandon Harrison, Bureau of Marine Fisheries, talking about that Striper tagging program there in Lower Delaware Bay. Reed's Beach is the vector. That seems to be the point area. They have those alleys there. They know where the fish are coming. But I mentioned in the closing of that segment, New Jersey has some great trophy freshwater fish. You know, people, I just love fishing. But, I know this is a saltwater area, but I love my fresh, love my salt, love my fresh. New Jersey is becoming really well known among the aficionados for this species as a trophy hotbed, quality fishing for pure strain muskellunge, a.k.a. muskies, and also its hybrid northern pike and pure strain muskie kin, the tiger muskie. And now you say muskies in New Jersey? You talk to guys, we're going to go to Ontario, or we're going to go to the Finger Lakes, or we're going to go out to Western Ohio, or we're going to go here, we're going to go there for trophy muskies. You don't have to. Trophy muskie fishing is available right here in the Garden State. You have the Delaware River, among some other waters we're going to get into. quality fishing. The article I have running this month in the Fisherman magazine is New Jersey, a freshwater fishing destination. Damn right it is. Everything from walleyes to hybrid stripers. But if you want the big, if you're a trophy hunter, you're a big fish. All you striper guys, hey, listen, you're into the big fish. The big fish. Catch and release these big fish. The muskie is your quarry, and it's in here in New Jersey. A very special guest on the Rack and Fin line right now. I've known the name for many years. First time I was able to make contact. God, it feels like something like War of the Worlds. Make contact with Kevin Johnson from New Jersey, chapter Muskies, Inc., chapter 22, all about fishing New Jersey. They have the organization has done yeoman's job of getting the Muskies established. Shout out to Craig Lemon up there at the Hackettstown Hatchery there in Oxford. Getting New Jersey to be a quality muskie destination. He's here on the Rack of Fin line right now to talk muskies, muskie fishing, and the Muskie Fishing School on Lake Apacon, May 15th. Check it out. We'll be talking on that. Kev, just sorry, I get too long. I'm turning into a muskie maniac, man.
It's muskie fever, buddy.
There was always I caught a few, not by design. I'm the first one. I never admit anything. I acknowledge it. How's that for a turn on things? Right. Oxford Furnace right. Lake, the Delaware River, Mercer Lake on a spinnerbait, right there across from the nice. Park, way back when I guess they put the crew boats or whatever, that little creek going up the side there, tossing a spinnerbait, get a muskie about 27, 28 inches. Whoa! These things are just, like you said, they are the apex predator. They are the top when it comes to New Jersey freshwater game fish. This is it. The muskie and so slightly lesser, albeit not derogatory term, the tiger muskie. Kev, and Muskies Incorporated has done a great job in bringing this to the fore. Congratulations. Let's get into it. How long has Muskies Inc. been around here in Jersey?
The chapter started back in the early 80s, and back then, you know, the only place you could fish was the Delaware River.
Right. Listen to me. Time out. It's my show. I'm being rude. Listen, I remember. Who are these guys? Muskies? What? Yeah, you got the Delaware River. Okay.
Yep.
And wow, has it evolved. Okay, go ahead, man. Sorry.
Yep. Big thanks to New Jersey fishing game biologist Bruce Ruppel. He's really the godfather of the original stocking and the muskies in New Jersey, and now Craig carries on the tradition up at the Hackettstown. So back in the mid-'80s to 89, we used to buy fish at 10 inches long from Minnesota, had them flown out here, and we would stock them. It probably cost us $10 a fish back in 80s, 90s money.
Right.
So we would sell raffle tickets. Any way we could get a dollar, we put those, scrounge those together, and they were flown out here, and then later they trucked them out from the Minnesota Muskie Farm, and that is the roots of what later became the record 40-plus pounder, and then eventually we stalked Greenwood Lake in congruent, with help from the fishing game. And then 1991, we stocked Echo Lake with the Newark Watershed.
Right.
And those fish in the early 90s became the brood stock. And in I think 95 was the first year New Jersey grew their own muskies.
Exactly.
And
right.
It was from those fish we bought and had trucked and flown out here.
Now, listen, what we have.
It's a real matter of pride.
As Kevin John said, we have the Delaware River, Echo Lake Reservoir, the Newark Watershed, Oxford Furnace Lake. I'm from the old school. I say Oxford Furnace Lake up there in Warren County. Greenwood Lake, which we share a border with New York. Mountain Lake in Warren County. Here it is. They put some in the Department of Defense pond in Salem County. Okay, that's not a viable real fishery yet. Lake Apacon, naturally. Little Swartzwood, again, not the greatest fishery yet, but getting there. And Monksville Reservoir. Now, the thing is with the muskies, they're a very, I guess we say, habitat-specific species. And they're the fish of the old legend, 10,000 casts. But this is when I knew. Listen to me, Johnson. This is when I knew Jersey muskie fishing was really coming to the fore when I heard from a good friend, industry acquaintance for many years, Steve Quinn from In Fisherman magazine. He's he and Joe Booker, when we had the Strand account, talked to Joe about muskie fishing. He says, you guys have something in Jersey. Here's Steve Quinn. Hey, Tom B., you really got some big muskies going over there. Wow. And I said, man, we have arrived. So again, the muskie chapter, keeping it going. You guys donate money to buy fathead minnows for forage for the muskie program at Hackensack. Go into that.
Yep. So back in the day, the way the muskie school worked back in the 80s was we took our boats out to the Delaware Water Gap because that was the only place to fish. Guy would put you in the boat, go make a few casts on a spot, go to another spot, make a few casts. He'd bring you back, and you threw whatever you wanted in the bucket for your donation. So if it was a buck, if it was 10 bucks, whatever it was. Now we use the muskie school as our primary fundraiser, and we purchase the fatheads and donate those to the hatchery so they can raise the musky fry to advanced fingerlings, and they're reared on live food. So when they stock them, they've already got that predatory instinct. They hunt live prey while they're in the hatchery.
Wow. We're speaking with Kevin Johnson from Muskies, Inc., Chapter 22 here in New Jersey. Well, Kevin, again, the freshwater scene is pretty much fractured. Muskies are, when it comes to popularity, hours spent fishing for, you know, going out either after work, before work, you know, stock trout, you got sunnies, you got bass, the whole bit. Muskies are sort of, let's say, elite's not really the right word, but it's a really specific trophy fishery. And there's not that many muskie anglers out there. What, again, was the impetus when you said, how many muskie guards are there really? We only have the Delaware River to fish. What really, you know, stuck the plug in the wall and the outlet there to get this going?
I think it's just the mystique of the fish, and it's always been that. You know, they're not easy to catch. They're top predator. You know, they're usually the biggest fish in the lake. There's not a lot of numbers. So it's almost mono on mono. You going after individual fish to try to learn its haunts. You know, 40-plus pound fish, fresh water. There's not too many, you know, not too many predators like that you can chase in the fresh water.
And Kevin, the magical 50-inch length, we're going to Wisconsin for the 50, we're going to Minnesota for the 50, we're going here, Finger Lakes for the 50. Hey, we got 50s here. Maybe not that many yet, but we got them here, and their numbers are definitely going to increase from my end. From what I see, again, up there at Oxford, up there at Greenwood, up there at Apacon, shout out to Lori at Dow's up there. I mean, the muskies, they're just an incredible fish that will test your skill. And let me tell you something, people, about getting physical. You toss these musky plugs that are the size of stock trout, if not bigger, or these tandem spinners. Yep. That, you talk about tendonitis there, Johnson. Mary, mother of God.
Yeah.
That'll wear you out, man.
Throwing 4, 6, 8 ounce lures and imitating a stock trout is not a bad idea.
And the thing
You know,
and the listeners, it beats you up. But once you get that swirl, once you get that follow, once all of a sudden everything stops and you're jolted right to your core, Kevin, that says it all right there. Now let's get to the muskie school. It's coming up, listeners, May 15th on Lake Apacon. Check page 30 of the Fish and Wildlife Digest, the Freshwater Fishing Digest. Kevin, are there any openings? And go into the school itself.
Yep. Due to COVID early on, we had to shift it to Greenwood Lake. So we're on Greenwood Lake, and Greenwood Lake Marina is hosting us.
Great. Okay.
Elena and the crew out there, and it's going to be May 15th, but we are booked solid with probably a 10 or deeper waiting list.
Wow.
The word is out, you know, know about it, and
listen, this is the saltwater version of chasing that 50-pound striper. Okay, let me get your take on, because some guys' hybrids are just disaster. That's like the Island of Dr. Moreau type thing, frankenfish or whatever. But what what about the tiger? I mean, it's a viable fish. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous esophid there. And I don't know, man, they get pretty big, about their size.
Yeah, they're unusual because they grow really fast and they kind of peak early.
Yep.
You know, it's kind of like they have an extra growth hormone there, and they don't necessarily, you don't usually live as long. And I believe the fishing game, through their trap nets and samplings and tagging studies, determined they're not doing as well as the pure strain for different reasons. They like a little different cover. They like a little different water temperature. So they've steered more towards the pure strain, but you know, there's days where the tigers will bite and nobody else will. So thanks for stocking them.
Tigers seem to be an enigma. I mean, you know, guys that caught several of the pure strains. How you doing, tigers? Can't catch them damn things. You know, it's like the redheaded stepchild. All of a sudden, that's the target. That's the challenge. Well, guys, I just found out from Craig Lemon at the Hackettstown Hatchery. Upcoming, I think next month or something, there's going to be a bonus stocking of leftover muskies. Greenwood Lake's going to get 2,880, Mercer Lake 450, Echo Lake in the watershed 415, Mountain Lake 125, and Oxford Furnace Lake up there in Warren County an extra 80. So Hackettstown is pumping out these fish, and Kev, it's just only a matter of time before all of a sudden, hey man, New Jersey is the place for muskies. Not going to be New York. Okay, not going to be Pennsylvania, Ohio, whatever. This is where you come for muskies. When it gets to that point, can the resource stand that kind of fishing pressure? Now, you're strictly catch and release, but do you think they can stand that kind of
conservation
pressure?
Group first and foremost, right. And we practice catch and release. Of course, somebody, you know, what you do by legal means is your right, but you don't get a fish to 40 pounds by – you know, keeping it when it's 36 inches. So a fish that gets, you know, it takes 4 to 6 years just to get to what used to be the old legal size, 30, 32.
Right.
A fish that's 45, 46 inches, 20 pounds, maybe 10 to 15 years old.
Right.
By the time it gets to that point, it may well have been caught and released multiple times. Multiple times. So the real key to the trophy fishery is the catch and release. Respect for the fishery, understanding the value of the apex predator, and that's what we try to do as a club.
We're speaking with Kevin Johnson's Muskie Inc. Chapter 22 in New Jersey. Where do you see it going from here? The club, the chapter, and the muskie fishery in New Jersey. Then we're going to close it out. Go.
It's just getting better. You know, they're kind of concentrating on the better fisheries and improving those. At one point, I think we had 16 bodies of water. I think last year he stocked 10, and he's focusing a little bit more towards Central and South Jersey because the fishery in the North is well established.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've had members been catching 50-inch fish since 2003.
Right.
And catch them in the trap net. So
I'll never forget.
Plenty of big fish.
When I was at the some outdoor shows back in January, I don't know how many years ago, and I come on some booth. I think it was the Lake of Pacon booth, the Knee Deep Club, whatever. And there is, I said, this guy looks familiar, man. This guy looks familiar. And the guy, Louie, and the other guy behind him said, that's Bobby Neal. He holds the state record muskie. Caught it, listeners, through the ice. Through the ice. Was that amazing or what?
Yep. I mean, that was 1997.
Yeah. And you know there's bigger fish out there. Kev, do you see, now we have some stockings in Cooper River down here in South Jersey and Camden County, the DOD lakes in Salem County. I'd like to get, you know, this muskie program, also Northern Pike program, expanded. But in the Southlands, I guess the access to the Delaware River, these fish are escape artists. In North Jersey, in your opinion, do you see other waters coming online for possible muskie stocking? We know the Delaware is, in and of itself, an incredible fishery, self-sustaining, whatever. But you see any more impoundments online?
I would love to, but I don't think it's in the cards right now. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to focus on more of the shad fisheries, which are closer down, you know, Central and South.
Right.
But, you know, if we could help make it happen, I would join with anybody that wanted to see that get done. But it's not really on the radar right now. The big last thing we really focused on was raising the size limit if you do choose to keep one, and raising what is considered the trophy size. I think it's now 45 inches.
Right, exactly.
For the trophy size. Yep.
Listeners, to find out more about Muskies Incorporated, you know, Chapter 22, New Jersey, muskiesinc.org. And for the Jersey Chapter, www.mi22.com. Great job there, Kevin. Keep it going from the early 80s. I mean, you guys have survived and kept it going, and you're seeing the fruits of your friggin' labor. I mean, now we got some incredible muskie fishing opportunities in New Jersey. It can only get better. Conservation necessary, catch and release only. It's that's the way to go for these fish. By the way, your personal best.
In New Jersey,
yes.
54 inches.
Minga Mort, what did you use for bait? A baby? What?
Very large bucktail spinnerbait.
Yep. And by the way, listeners, the contact, Ralph, says, Tommy P. This guy, Kevin, he's probably the best muskie fisherman in New Jersey. I had to let that out there. Okay.
Well, I got taught by somebody, so.
Oh, well, there you go.
I got a hands off to that.
you're in the top two. Kevin, thanks so much. Listeners, again, muskies.
Thanks, Tom.
New Jersey is incredible. Yes, we have big freshwater fish, trophy muskies, 50-plus inches. You know, Kevin, they're not becoming that uncommon, thanks to the conservation ethic, and it's working. It's absolutely working. Yeah, Kevin Johnson's Muskies, Inc. Be right back. We've got a couple of fishery reports lined up. Grab that cup, grab that Red Bull. Rack and Fin Radio.
So what is Talk with a Purpose? It's a lively, informative, number one rated talk show on Saturday morning. Hi, this is John DeMasi. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 9 a.m. till noon for Talk with a Purpose, heard right here on WPG Talk Radio 95.5. And if you miss it on Saturday, we replay it on Sunday from 5 until 8 p.m. Don't miss Talk with a Purpose, Saturday and Sunday, right here on WPG Talk Radio 95.5, South Jersey's talk station.
Every day, someone comes up to me and says, Amy, how amazing is Xfinity Internet? And I always say, guys, I could go on and on about how it gives you more than just fast speeds for all your work, school, and everything from home needs, but I have places to be. And then I'd also mention you get reliable in-home Wi-Fi coverage and protection from network threats, but I gotta run. I have a thing. Really, it happens all the time. Can your internet do that?
Get started with Xfinity Internet for $34.99 a month for 24 months with a one-year agreement. And get advanced security free with the X5 Gateway. Just activate through the Xfinity app. Go to Xfinity.com, call 1-800-XFINITY, or visit a store today to learn more. Requires paperless billing and autopay. Ends 5/4/21. Restrictions apply. New Performance Pro Internet customers only. Equipment, taxes and fees extra and subject to change. After term, regular rates apply.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
We're going to Dan at Bucktails Outfitters right there, Old Harding Highway. Egg Harbor River right there. Lake Lenape right there. I just went by the Lake Lenape bulkhead. They're in Mays Landing, Gaskill Park. Whoa, were they catching fish. Danny, thanks for joining us. How you doing, little brother?
I'm doing great, man. Fish are biting, so everything good now.
Damn bloodworms. They were knocking the snot out of short stripers, some big-ass yellow perch there. Saw some white perch. A lot of guys fishing there at the bulkhead on the river. What's happening? What are you hearing?
They're filling five-gallon buckets up right now.
Yep.
So it's on fire. Anywhere from the bulkhead right here all the way to Beasley's Point. These striper and perch are in pretty heavy this year, and you could jig them, bloodworm. Just about anything you could think about how to catch them, you'll catch them.
Yeah, Dan, I saw some guys farther down by the Inn at Sugar Hill plugging. So there's plenty of bass around and keeper size as well. Now, what about that incredible lake, Lake Lenape, right there in the center of town? You got bass. You got pickerel. You have perch. You have crappies. It is a cornucopia, brother. What's happening?
Oh, it's a secret little gem over there. I mean, if you get in there and you do some fishing, you'll catch them up. There's some huge bass in the back there, and you could bring the kids for pan fish in the
yep.
front right there by the boathouse, and you could catch a decent amount of fish out there.
Okay, Dan, now the bite at Lenape, mostly what, minnows? I've seen some guys there, some of the bass guys especially.
Yeah, you could use minnows, shiners, any kind of night crawler, you know, little grub or something like that. And, you know, as far as lures, they're always good, too.
Dan, that outflow, you have the dam there. It goes under the road. I forget that little overpass right there. There's people on both sides, and they are bailing some white perch, man.
Yeah, with that construction going on right now, it's kind of hard access. But
right.
If you could, you know, make your way in there,
that's it.
It's a dead end, so they got to come through and go back.
And that's exactly right. Okay, Danny, thanks much, man. Best of Marissa and the kids. See you soon, brother.
You got it. Have a good one.
Let's jump eastward there to Fanatics on West Avenue in Ocean City, America's famous and most favorite family fishing and vacation resort. We got our main man, Jess, on the line right now. Hey, man, Back Bay, Corson's Inlet, down another end. I'm already thinking of Sea Island on this one. Jess, what's happening, man? And I know you got some information at Townsend as well. Go!
I actually don't have anything on Townsend, surprisingly, just Corson's down there. Corson's are starting to get some short fish. Mainly on soft plastics, but there's more back in the intercoastals and farther in the Back Bay, and bigger fish as well, especially the fish in Corson's. They're like 12 inches. But I got reports today from the intercoastal, guys on kayaks and guys on boats,
just
marking fish everywhere on lures, and you know the fish are on bait all throughout the intercoastal.
Now, Jay, on bait, what are you talking about?
Bloodworms and clams, but they're sitting on bunker. Because they're bunker everywhere.
Wow. Now, the plastics, what's the dealio? Z-Man swimmers, what?
You can do them. Little Bass's ass inch, four inch, 5 inch, white, pink, nuclear chicken. And then, you know, farther in the Back Bay, like Nye Street, there's been a number of fish there on bait, clams and bloods, soft plastics at night. And then you go up the river, and it's a different game. There's much bigger fish up there, a lot of perch, bloods and clams as well.
Now, the Ocean City Reef. Anything on the tog?
Haven't heard much, but I've gotten a ton of reports that there is tog in the Back Bay here already.
Yeah, I heard some information, though, on Townsend. I said, man, Justin's going to know about that. I said, he's got to know about that. Well,
people go out.
You're so jamming, right, what you're doing there. And, guys, it's getting out there when the conditions are right. Okay, Jay, we'll talk to you guys next week. Thanks, man.
All right, Tom. Thank you.
Let's close out with the great Hans Sue Bait and Tackle 970 Route 109 in Cape May. We got Nick on the Rack and Fin Radio line for a report. Nicky, what's happening, brother?
Most action's going on in the Back Bays. Guys are throwing like 4 and 5 inch paddle tails. And they're picking up bass up to 28. Actually, I had a couple guys showing me a couple keepers from the day.
Nice.
We got some Delaware Bay action starting to pick up. The flats are going to start turning on for the guys throwing the clams for the drum fish coming.
Oh,
and then
the boaters
are out there chunking up some bass.
Wow. Nice stuff. Nick, you hearing anything on weak fish at night? Maybe it's April 10th, seems to be. All the years I've done Ocean City fishing from there south. April 10th, that weekend around there, seems to be when the lights come on for the weak fish. What are you hearing?
Well, we just got a big load of pink zooms in, so we're ready for it.
And there you go. Hey, what is it with pink with the weak fish? Can you answer? I can't find an answer for that.
Well, it seems like every little area has their special color. What most people use white or black, where it seems like Cape May, we're all about the pink down here.
Nick, the drum, you think, in consistently next week or two?
Yeah, I think if you were to target some of the flats up in the upper bay, you would start to see some puppies starting to be caught.
And you have clams?
Yes, clams in the shell, fresh shuck clams, salted clams, red clams, all types of clams.
This is critical. That's Clam Nation right there at Hans Sue Bait and Tackle. Okay, you take care. I'll get to you guys next week.
Thanks.
See you, man. It is happening. That'll do it for this week on Rack and Fin Radio. Me, Tom P. Again, a happy new year. Yeah, it is the real, real opening of trout season today. There's stock trout, non-trout waters here. People catch them, keep them, eat them. We're going to have a great recipe next week, we hope. We're trying to track down the chef. And just have a great time. Largemouth bass, pickerel. As Nick said, the drummers are going to be starting up on the flats pretty soon. You got plenty of stripers around, and you have the white perch. It's just that time of year. See you next week. Rack and Fin Radio. God bless America. God bless our troops. God bless our first responders and law enforcement. See you next week. Rack and Fin Radio.
95.5 FM.